right, we're going to get move on with our last presentation of the day. So we have Yi Mao, the CST lab manager for MatSec Security, with her presentation on Enough Entropy, Justify It.
Thank you, Jonathan. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to my presentation, and thank you for coming. I mean it, because this is the end of the day, and this is the last presentation. I know there's another CMEP presentation going on in next door. So even though this conference agenda states that this presentation will review various definition, mathematical definitions of entropy, and I know it's going to be heavy. So I actually did some modification of my agenda. I moved out the mathematical definitions of entropy and replaced it with a clip. I hope I'm going to make this presentation attractive and also enjoyable to make it worth your time to be here. I will start with a humorous look at how things were before the CMEP implementation guide, the FIPS implementation guidance published by the CMVP on entropy. It was published on August 7th. And then we will zoom in, take a close look at IG 714 on the entropy KVS, and then the coupling IG 715 on entropy assessment. We will go through two examples of the commonly used entropy source. The first one is CPU time jitter-based entropy source, and the second is ring oscillator-based entropy source. And we will conclude this presentation by finishing up the clip we start with to show that by embracing these two IDs, how things should be.
RNG is to be tested tonight, no reviewers to be seen. There is a source of entropy, and it looks like the design is clean. The vendor's howling that they must pass on time. Didn't look for flaws, but it's not a crime. Don't let them see. Be the easy tester you have to be. Failure, no please. The vendor will yell. CMVP won't help. Let it go, let it go. Testing entropy is a chore. Let it go, let it go. We keep.
Before the IG 714 and IG 715 were published. Well, testing entropy is a chore, and the weak keys are out the door. There's a possibility. May not be every keys are weak, but there's a possibility. It's against the standard. The FIPS 140-2, the derived test requirement, has a clause. AS, the assertion 713, states that, not literally, but I try to rephrase it to make it short, easy to understand. Guessing the seed value of an RNG, this RNG is in generic term. For example, DRBG 898 is an RNG, not particularly referenced to the NX9.31 RNG, okay? So guessing the seed value of an RNG is at least as hard as guessing the generated key. And the burden of the proof is on the vendor. And here comes the vendor's wishes. Vendor say, how about let us show you our design and the data, but you do the proof for us. Will lab be happy to do an entropy assessment and proof? Here's the emotion I got when we talk about doing the entropy assessment in our lab. No, not me. I don't care. I'm too tired to do it. There's only one faint voice saying, yeah, it's the right thing to do it. Let's do it. By the way, I have a homegrown artist to provide unlimited art supply for me on my demand. So that is a perspective. But no matter who does it, whether the vendor takes the burden of provide rational or lab take up a step looking to the design and collect the data, do the necessary statistical testing, or jointly. But the point here is someone has to look into it, do the assessment, and make sure that the requirement is satisfied. And before we get into the requirement, first thing first, there's three very fundamental notions that we need to be familiar with. First, the NIST required minimum key length is 112 bits for a module to run in the FIPS approved mode. For a given key, there's an apparent key strength that is determined by the key length according to the table and the formula in the implementation guidance 7.5. The apparent strength is not necessarily equal to the key length. Some case they are identical, some they are not. It's determined by the table. You can do a table lookup in the IG 7.5. So for a three key triple desk key, the apparent key length, the key length is 192 bits, but the apparent key strength is 112 bits of security. And for AES 250, the apparent key length is identical to its key strength. It has 256 bits of entropy. And for RSA keys, a little bit complicated, you do need to do the table lookup. The RSA 3072 key is equivalent to having 128 bits of security. Where the RSA 4096 bit key, you cannot find that corresponding line in the table. That's where the formula is coming handy. You need to use that formula in the IG 7.5, and I think approximately that it's equivalent to 252 bits of security. So in addition to apparent key strength, there's a notion of the real key strength. The real key strength is determined by the entropy in the RNG seed from which the key is generated. So you think about it, it's like a person. You have the apparent age and you have the real age. The only difference is that after meeting the minimum requirement of the age that you can vote or you can drive or you can drink, for a human being, a person, you may wish your real your apparent key strength is as smaller as possible. However, when it comes to the key strengths, your apparent key strength, you may want it to be as large as possible. But whatever this apparent key strength is, it doesn't count. You have to look in deeper into what is the real key strength here. Now, how much entropy is enough? It has to meet two conditions. At least 112 bits of entropy to seed the RNG that generates keys, and the amount of entropy the RNG seed must be equal to or greater than all of the apparent strengths of the generated keys. So it's very often that a module has a DRBG and it's seeded once, and then the DRBG start to generate the random strings, and these strings are used for the different purposes. They can be used for AES keys, triple desk keys, or as a base to generate the asymmetric key pairs like DSA key pair, RSA key pair, Diffie-Hellman, you know, so on and so forth. So all of the keys you generated from this DRBG that is seeded with certain amount of the entropy should be equal to or greater than all the keys that you generated with their apparent strengths. If you meet these two requirements, then yes, entropy is enough. IG 7.14 is intended to answer the following two questions. First, when is an entropy assessment necessary? And then if it is not enough, how to handle it? How to handle the cases when the entropy is insufficient? By insufficient, it's meant in one of the two cases. And here, you know, sufficient, you have to have taking the conjunction of two conditions. And insufficient, failing one of the conditions, it's insufficient. So either the entropy does not meet the minimum 112-bit strength, or it is not sufficient to account for n apparent strengths of the generated key. Any of the generated keys, as long as you have one generated key, that the apparent length, or apparent strength looks greater than the entropy in the seed of the RNG, then you are failing this condition. You can generate many keys, as we mentioned before. You have the triple desk key with 112 bits. You are good for that. And then you have the AES 128 bits, and you're also good for it. But if you further claim that your AES 250 bit key, the apparent strength, has been accounted by your seed, which has only 128 bits of entropy, then you are fall short to meeting this sufficient requirement, okay? When must a lab perform the entropy assessment? When the entropy assessment is necessary? Well, two big categories. First, if the entropy source is within the module boundary, then the assessment is necessary. Again, there's a derivations of the definitions of module boundary. For a hardware module, the boundary is a physical boundary of that hardware module. For a software module, the boundary is a logical boundary of that module. And starting from this year, there's an idea about the subchip. Historically, the smallest scope for a hardware module that you can go is a single chip. But considering the advance of the technology, now you can fit a very complex system on one chip. And the chip may have disjoined subsystems on the same physical die. Then NIST, you know, come up with very novel idea and put the implementation guidance in place, which is IG 120, for initial published this year in March, and allow to have the subchip module to be validated by the program. So when you consider the subchip module, it has a physical boundary and also has a logical boundary. The physical boundary is its chip, the single chip boundary, and the logical boundary is the component that goes with that subchip. So the 7.14 did not explicitly say that the subchip module, when you consider it, you have to take its logical boundary as its boundary. However, if you read the IG 120, reading between the lines, it is implied. So I kind of want to make this complete and put all different categories of the module together on one slide to make it clear that the subchip module, when we talk about its boundary for the consideration of the entropy source, we are talking about its logical boundary here. Okay, so things are black and white. It's clear once you know what the definition of the boundary is, and if it's within the boundary, then the assessment is necessary. But when the entropy source is outside of the module boundary, then it became a little bit vague. The requirement is assess the entropy strength whenever possible. So I think you would agree with me that whenever possible is a little bit subjective, and we can get back to it later in my presentation. So looking into the entropy source when it is within the module boundary, there are three possible outcomes for the entropy assessment. The first is the assessed entropy does not meet the minimum 112-bit strength. Then it's a red line. Stop. The module cannot be validated. Okay? So we stop here. Go back to redesign it. If you pass the first kind of speed bound, you are meeting the minimum 112-bit of strength. Then take one step further. Ask the second question. Is it sufficient to account for all apparent strengths of generated keys? If you happen to find that it is not sufficient to account for one apparent strength of the generated keys, then what to do? Well, I think the CMVP is generous in this case. You can still go ahead to complete the module validation. Module can still be validated. However, it is required to add a caveat stating that the module generates cryptographic keys whose strengths are modified by a variable entropy. So this is a warning signal to the federal users. Say, even though you are procuring a module that has been FIPS validated, however, it has a kind of weak entropy source to support the apparent strength of the generated keys. Okay. The last possible outcome is a happy ending. You know, it's meeting the minimum 112-bit requirement, and also it's sufficient to account for all of the apparent strengths of the generated keys. Then you have the FIPS certificate for this module, and no caveat is necessary. So three different outcomes for the scenario when the entropy source is within the boundary. Mm-hmm. Now things getting a little bit more complicated for the case where the entropy source is outside your module boundary, okay? We said you do it as much as possible. You do it when you have your information allows you to do that, okay? So the first scenario is someone knows. I think in the IG it says it is known that the entropy does not meet the minimum 112-bit of the strength. So it's red signal, stop, the module cannot be validated. When I first prepared this slide, I literally copied that statement from the IG714, and I said, it's known that the entropy does not meet, but our tech writer doesn't like it. Who knows it? So he put in the vendor, and I added the slash tester. You know, either vendor knows it, or, you know, if vendor say, I don't know anything about it, but then if, let's say, tester, or I think someone from the community, you know that it's a bad entropy, a bad entropy source, and it's very weak, then do something about it. Don't take it. Don't use it. Think some other alternatives. The second scenario is if the vendor or the tester does not know the minimum strength. You know, it's outside of the boundary. It's out of my control. I don't know. Based on the good faith, I don't know what to do. Well, you can still go ahead to complete the module validation since it's outside of your boundary, but you have to make the certificate carry a caveat. The caveat states that there is no assurance of the minimum strength of the generated keys. Okay. So it's a stronger, I sense it. I think it's a stronger a caveat, but we will get to it when I talk to the CMVP reviewers, they think it's actually orthogonal. It's independent to caveat. One necessary implies the other one. So let's say it is not known that the minimum strength is absolutely less than 112 bits, and you go ahead, you have the module validated. However, you do know something in addition to that. You know that the entropy is not sufficient to account for an apparent strength of the generated keys. So here, it's a little bit more interesting scenario here. I have been thinking that how come, if I even don't know the minimum strength, why would I know whether it would be sufficient or not sufficient? So again, you know, my best resource is go back to the CMVP and ask for guidance. So they have quite some enlightening discussion, and I'm going to present a little bit modified with my edits there. So they give me a metaphor, which I think will also help you to understand kind of the intent of these caveats. Think about you are in Las Vegas and you go to a scenario casino and you want to try your luck at a gambling game. So the first caveat saying that there's no assurance whether you're going to win or lose a game. Okay, so there's no assurance for winning. Okay, no minimum assurance, no assurance of any sort. The second caveat kind of saying that if you ever get to win, you're not going to win more than $1,000. So you have a cap on the top. You don't know whether you're going to win or lose, but if you're ever going to win, you're not going to win more than $1,000. So going back to look at this case, basically say you don't know what is the minimum entropy feeding to your system, whether it's more than 112 bits or less than 112 bits. However, you do know that it will never really be sufficient to account for your AES-256 bit of key. If it, by some chance, exceeds the 112-bit minimum bar, but at the most, it may reach 112.8, but it will not get 256. So in that case, you have the you can get the module validated, but the module will carry two caveats. One stating that no assurance on the minimum strength. The other one, I would call in short, modified strengths. Modify the strength caveat, okay? So no minimum strength caveat plus modify the strength caveat.
Sorry, one question.
Mm-hmm.
So how does it work? I have no idea about the minimum strength, but I know that I fall short about one of the counts.
Yeah, very good. So we go, so we covered three cases and there's two more remaining. See if I'm going to cover all the questions that you have in your mind. Now, if the vendor tester knows there are at least 112 bits minimum strength, so you know it, but also know that entropy is not sufficient to account for apparent, then the result will be you have the FIPS certificate, you have one caveat with the modified strength caveat. And if the vendor and tester, they know that they are at least 112 bits and also knows it's sufficient, then wonderful result, you get this FIPS certificate without any caveats, okay? So here's a summary for two different scenarios where you have the within the boundary, you're outside of the boundary, and so on and so forth. And I want to highlight three things. If you want to state that you don't know for the minimum strength, then it has to be outside of your boundary, okay? Within the boundary, you must know. If you don't know, don't use it in your module. And then there are two cases which I labeled as not logically possible. It's not explicitly stated in the IG-714. But if you look at, if you even don't know whether the minimum requirement has been met and you claim it's sufficient, that's really not logical. So I labeled it. I tried to provide an explanation why it's not stated there. And then the other point I want to say that I think in the CMVP eyes, if you know it's not sufficient or you don't know whether it's sufficient, they are considered the same. You will have to have the modified strength caveat anyway, okay? So if you still have the question, let me answer to the end and finish the slides. Okay. So what we have talked about is really you're looking at the module to be validated, and these are all the cases where the in or out of the boundary and how you handle it. What if you put your module to the other platform that are not tested? Well, regardless, if porting to an untested platform is allowed when running a module on such an untested platform, that is very often for a software module, then the no assurance of the minimum strength of a genetic key is applicable, okay? So now, when I know, I don't know. When the entropy source is outside of the module boundary, and if the entropy input is passively loaded into the module, your module don't do anything. You don't pass it, you don't mix it, you don't try to kind of manipulate, assess it. You just take whatever the outside source give it to you. Then, yeah, you know you don't know what you are getting. And the module does not have any control over the entropy input. So under these three conditions, you know, you can claim, you know you don't know. But the warning sign for the federal user is really, not all FIPS certificates are equal. No assurance of the minimal strength is a very serious caveat. Try to know as much as possible, okay? The vendor say, may I pretend I don't know the entropy source? Well, within the module boundary, no. No knowledge of the entropy source, no FIPS certificate. Outside of the module boundary, yes, if you wish, you may. But what's good about it? You are getting a caveat. And you know, as a lab, we are not detectives. It's based on the neutral trust, good faith. And if really you say you don't know anything, even though you know it, it's not strong enough. I think this is a part of the education process. We really want to kind of show you the consequences of that and let us know what you know. Okay, so better off have some control over the entropy source. You try to actively getting it. When you design, yes, entropy source may be outside of the boundary, but you can do something within your boundary. Try to get multiple sources. And when you're getting it and do a little bit of assessment and set up, let's say, healthy checkpoint, a continuous test, a sanity check, a safeguard, you know, you can do something. So that will be actively getting the entropy from the source that is outside of your boundary. To know is to verify. You know, we don't take words for it. You can say, I know it, I don't know it. Well, if you know it, justify it, prove it, okay? So the vendor in the security policy has to state that the minimum number of the bits of the entropy and also state the entropy estimate of the RNG seed. And for the lab, in a separate PDF report, we have to confirm the entropy assessment by reviewing the design of entropy source and running statistical testing on the raw entropy data. Okay, the IG715 give the guidance of how to do the entropy assessment. It's always a design analysis first. The design analysis is not about comparing the length of the seed and the length of the genetic key, but it is about the comparison of the numbers of the operations required to guess the seed and the genetic keys. So it boils down to the amount of the entropy. There are some recommended tools to use, but it's not mandatory, and some of these tools are still in the draft state. They are not officially released. However, as a lab, we try really to use as much tool as possible. So we embrace, we use the NIST-STS, which is a test against SP-822, and we also use the NIST Python script, which tests against 890B. We also use a tool from the industry to test the entropy. The result of this static testing may not always agree with each other. And you have to see for each set of the test result what is telling us. The statistical data, when it says the data is good, it doesn't necessarily mean that your design is good. However, when the data says statistic data result showing some failing cases, that is a good indicator that your design is not good, okay? Now, how to report the entropy estimation. The lab should provide a PDF addendum, including detailed logical diagram illustrating all the entropy sources, the tester's arguments in supporting of the accuracy of the vendor provided the rationale, results of statistical testing, optional but strongly recommended, and specification of definitions of the entropy used. For instance, the tool int that we use, they use the Shannon entropy definition. The Python script for the 890B tool, it uses the mean entropy definition. There's one exception. If the non-deterministic RNG approved for the use in classified application, then you don't have to do the entropy analysis. There's no report required. If vendor want to choose claim a small amount, feel free to do that. However, this case is really happened. Really, we do the module validation for the commercial use, and it's very rare, at least I haven't seen any case that the commercial module have this one approved for the classical use application there. Now, very quickly, we often see the CPU time jitter-based entropy. So what we are looking at, from the design side, we are looking at the sampling frequency and the clock precision. You really want to slow it. You want to sample it much, much, much slower than the clock ticks. And then how many bits you're getting would count towards your entropy calculation from each reading matters. If you only get the least significant bit, normally the result is much, much better. You get the 32 bits and count all towards it because you have many leading digits that are not changing over the time. So the sampling frequency should be much slower than the clock frequency to ensure the independence of the time reading. That is critical. And when it comes to the ring oscillator-based entropy, we are looking at the number of the ring oscillators, position of the ring oscillators, make sure that they are not placed close enough so that they harmonize over the time. And the frequency of the ring oscillator has to be relative prime to each other. And again, the sampling frequency should be lower than the frequency of the each ring oscillators to allow the ring oscillators grow through their four cycles. Okay? So now let's see with
it's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. There's right, there's wrong, there's rules for me.
It's how much you know, how you know it, how much you tell the lab. I have no other better way to say we need to do it. Okay? Okay. So after this IG, we should say an entropy test is a must. I hope we all agree. And the easy test is gone. Okay? If you want to see the entire song, you know, two parts connect together, please visit our website and under the media link, and you will see it. And thank you very much for your attention.
I'll also add that last year we had a very nice book, clip two. And is that still available?
Yes. Under the same link, you can see all of the EdSec clips. Yeah.
It's very interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, but it's work from the entire EdSec. It's not my only doing. We have very talented people together.
Very creative and talented. Any questions? I know we are keeping you away from the drinks, which is which is a bad thing, but any questions at all? So you did an excellent job.
Thank you. I will be around, you know, just catch me in the hallway in case you have some discussions to carry on.
Thank you, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to thank you at the end of the day. She started the day by thanking me, so I have